highlighting the amazing stories from inside the North Clackamas School District. This is the Proud to Be NCSD podcast, hosted by longtime principal and current community relations director, Curtis Long.
And welcome into the Proud to Be NCSD podcast during this final week before our schools close for the upcoming winter break. Yes, there's a lot of excitement in the air during this time of year for many of our students and families, but certainly not all of them. And that's why the purpose of today's podcast is to not only raise awareness of a growing and disheartening topic throughout our school district and others around us, but hopefully also inspire you to take action and lend a helping hand in any way you can. The topic is housing insecurity or homelessness. And while many of our 16,000 plus North Clackamas students will spend the upcoming winter break celebrating with loved ones inside warm homes, some are worrying about where they'll lay their heads down to sleep tonight. In our very own district, that could mean trying to navigate school while sleeping in shared housing, a motel, a public shelter, or even the family car. So when a North Clackamas family finds itself without stable residency, or a school teacher, principal, counselor, secretary, or any staff member learns of an NCSD student facing a housing crisis, who do they call? Well, the answer is Katie Ray, who has served as our district's homeless student and family liaison for the past 7 years and is kind enough to join us on the podcast this week. Katie, thanks so much for being here. I know you're always busy working behind the scenes for so many of our families, but is it even busier this time of year?
Yes, it is actually. Thank you, Curtis. It is busier this time of year. There's a lot of families in crisis. The weather changes certainly affect people and their plans of, you know, where they're going to stay and how they're going to get to school. Trying to plan for the holidays is also a big stressor for families. So we do have a lot of people reaching out and families that we're trying to find resources for.
I think many of our listeners are aware that Oregon is facing a homeless crisis statewide, but many might think that doesn't affect students or families in North Clackamas, and that simply isn't true, is it?
No, it's not true. So yeah, we do have quite a large number of students that are experiencing homelessness. Our team works to identify those students, so we work with our district staff to make sure that they're aware that our program exists and that they know how to reach us if they are aware of a student who's experiencing homelessness. We also work out of the Wichita Center in Milwaukee, which is a part of our school district. So that center tends to be a hub, more or less, for families that are looking for resources. So we have some families that will just reach out to us directly and let us know what's going on and ask for some help finding a place to stay or a shelter program. And then we also have families that will be referred to us through school counselors and secretaries.
So it could be school counselors, it could be secretaries, it could be a principal. Do you ever hear from maybe other family members or other community members that say, hey, we have a family in our school that may need some help?
We do. Yeah, I've had teachers reach out. Our bus drivers also have identified students and referred them over. We have had people call from apartments just randomly, look up resources through the district and say, I think this family might need some help. And we have to be careful how we discuss family situations, obviously. So we take in information. We don't give out information, but we do get referrals from kind of all over the place.
So when it comes to homelessness, all school districts nationwide follow the federal McKinney-Vento Homeless Assistance Act. Give us a brief summary of this legislation and what it requires of all school districts across the country.
Yeah, so public school districts are required to follow the tenets of the McKinney-Vento law. So it requires schools to provide students with certain rights if they are in a situation where they lose their housing. So students who, the way I usually describe it is students who are, you know, sometimes living with family members and the whole family might lose their housing due to eviction or some other safety issue at the apartment that they're living in or the house that they're in. So the McKinney-Vento Act actually governs kind of all services for homeless individuals in all sectors of life. Part of that law that governs public education, so that's where our liaison comes in, where I come in, and our district is required to follow certain regulations that are part of that educational law. So that includes school of origin access for students who lose their housing. So if a student does become homeless, they're able to still access the school that they were attending when they lost their housing, if that's what the parent and the student want to do. It also allows students to enroll in school if they are living somewhere temporarily and they don't have all the documentation that's normally required. So we have families who sometimes relocate from out of state and they might not have their immunization records because of the quickness in which they had to relocate for various reasons. They might be staying with relatives or in a doubled up situation where they're sharing housing. So they don't have their own place to live. In that case, they would qualify for McKinney-Vento. And then they're able to use that temporary address to locate the residential school and then enroll there, ideally with less requirements of documentation and other things that you'd normally be required to provide. So they don't don't need to provide a proof of address, for example, if they're in that situation.
So you mentioned earlier that you hear from school counselors or secretaries or bus drivers or principal. Take us through the process of what happens when you get that phone call. What do you do next?
So if someone calls me and says they have a student that they think might qualify for McKinney-Vento, I take down the information, and depending on who's providing the referral, we talk about the best way to outreach the family. So it might be someone who has a really good connection with their school counselor and might feel a little bit unsure about getting a phone call from a random person that they don't know.
Right.
In which case, I would work with a counselor to see if they were able to make the first call to the parent and just let them know there's someone named Katie who works with families who are in your situation. There are resources available through the school district. Is it okay if she gives you a phone call? That, you know, 9 times out of 10 will work better than just me picking up the phone and calling someone, which I've also done, obviously, if need be. And I can do that in a way that is a little more generic. So if we have a new family moving into the school district and there's an idea that they might be in a situation that would qualify for them for McKinney-Vento, I would usually call them and just say, I realize you're a new family. I just want to make sure you know about the resources that are available, and that can kind of open up other things in the conversation.
You mentioned this before. The federal law says that students who qualify as homeless are entitled to transportation to their original school, no matter the location of their current temporary housing. How does North Clackamas handle that? I remember as a principal, we were getting buses or vans or drivers that were driving kids from way beyond our attendance area, but it was great because we could keep those kids in our school where they felt they belonged.
Yeah, so as you would imagine, we work pretty closely with our school's district's transportation department. We take the information. So if we have a family that, let's say they attended Spring Mountain and unfortunately they lost their housing due to eviction or rent increase or something along those lines, and they relocated to Vancouver, Washington, we would contact the parent first, obviously, and work out the details of the transportation, take down that information and send it off to our transportation department. North Clackamas Transportation does have a router whose job it is specifically to work with these types of requests. So that's kind of nice because we always work with the same person and she's familiar with the different types of living situations and the kind of complications that might arise. So we send the request to her, and then based on where the student is living, our transportation department will find the best way to accommodate the transportation needs. So if we have someone like this situation where they're in Vancouver, it would probably be provided through a contracting service. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that means a radio cab would be providing transportation to the student. We also have another car service that we use that is a little less conspicuous. So more of it just looks like a regular car that's driving a student to school.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those drivers are trained and qualified at the same level as our district bus drivers. So we definitely go over that with the parent if there's any misconceptions or concerns about their student riding in a cab to school. And then if we have a student who's in district, so if they're, let's say again, we have a Spring Mountain student and they move to Milwaukee temporarily, then our district's transportation department would likely reroute something that's already in place or use one of the vans that you mentioned, which are able to accommodate those in-district routes that are just not serviced by a regular school bus.
So it's really a partnership between your department and the transportation department gets on board. Really a lot of people behind the scenes working together to make sure that these families and these kids get to have as stable a routine as they had before they started to experience homelessness.
We have to account for some things like increased time in traffic and commuting, which doesn't always work for every student. We do try to find something that will be helpful so they don't have to transfer schools unless for some reason they prefer to move to a different school. I will say also, I think we've all seen staff shortages kind of across the board in terms of public school staff in every area of education. Our bus drivers especially, I'm sure people who have been here since before COVID remember that we're always looking for bus drivers, and then following the past couple years, it's been in even higher need. So if anyone out there knows anyone who wants to drive students to school, I always say you don't have to drive a huge yellow bus. You could drive a van or a car even. And it's always needed because even now we've had an increased need this year for students, and they're already, our services are already filling up.
Yeah, they could look right on the district website under transportation. We are always looking for more drivers for sure. And just like you said, you don't have to drive the big yellow bus. There are lots of different other vehicles that you could certainly be driving. Katie, you mentioned this a little bit before, but when a family in North Clackamas is facing home insecurity, it's often the case they're also facing insecurities with food or with clothing. How does our district address that?
One of the ways that we address it is through the Wichita Center. So we have, where my office is, we have a clothes closet there for students in North Clackamas schools. And we also have a food pantry that has really expanded over the past 7 years that I've been in my position. So it's a shopping style pantry where parents can come and when the pantry is open and pick out food and shop like a regular store. We also have hygiene supplies there that we provide to families, and we also will take out to students in schools if they're needing extra hygiene supplies. And then in addition to all that, we have school supplies that we give out usually at the beginning of the school year, but we also have them in stock all year. So if we have new students, or we've had students or families show up who had to leave their living situation really abruptly due to an unsafe situation or potentially domestic violence situation. So in that case, if school supplies are left behind, which has happened, we will provide the student with a new backpack and supplies.
And where do those supplies come from? I know a lot of times schools will do drives of their own, a toiletry drive or a school supply drive. Where do a lot of those supplies come from?
Yeah, a lot of them do come from our schools. So those are always super helpful. We have a lot of opportunity to provide food, clothing, and school supplies and all sorts of things to students for any classroom or school that would be interested in doing something like that. We have a lot of support from the community as well. So different sports teams and Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts and 4-H clubs, they will do drives and neighborhood fundraisers and bring supplies to Wichita as well. Our food pantry is part of the Oregon Food Bank network of food pantries. So we get a regular shipment of food from them every week. And then in addition to the staple items that they provide, we are always very happy and encouraging of people to bring food donations as well, because as we all know, anyone who works with students or people like to eat different things and have specific tastes, and we like to offer a variety and meet different food allergy specifications and things like that.
That was going to lead right to my next question. If there are people that are listening right now, whether they're at home or in their car driving around, and think, you know, that is something I would love to help out with, what's the best way to get involved and maybe be a volunteer at the Wichita Center?
We have a volunteer coordinator, Kathy Harrison. She handles all the volunteer requests, so I would definitely recommend contacting her. There's a district volunteer application on the website, and there's a way to stipulate that you would like to volunteer at Wichita. And then in addition to that, for people who might be busy with work days and not able to volunteer in person, as you mentioned, like bringing supplies by or doing like a neighborhood food drive or something is always super helpful. We also have a website where we list our donation needs, so that is kept pretty up to date by Kathy.
Do you ever have donations that show up as a surprise?
Yes, definitely. I mean, we're a little limited on space, so there's not things that we can always take. Sometimes we have to let things go that we really wish we didn't have to let go.
Right.
I know one year when I first started and I didn't think so much about the way to do things, I guess I took a bed that somebody wanted to donate, and it was in our office for probably a month because there was a family who needed it, but they couldn't get to the center to pick it up. And there's a lot of back and forth. And I remember my coworkers being like, when is this bed frame? Yeah, that also happened with the Christmas tree one year.
Oh, gosh. She had a Christmas tree in storage.
Yes, I think it was through our Sabin program. Okay. They wanted to donate a Christmas tree, and I was happy to take it and didn't think through the fact that it would need care. And so we filled a trash can up with water and put the tree in it, and it sat there until I shoved it in the back of my hatchback to deliver to a family.
Thanks for tuning in to A Tough Topic this week on the Proud to Be NCSD podcast with our district's homeless student and family liaison, Katie Ray. So far, we've learned how the federal McKinney-Vento Homeless Assistance Act helps guide our district's actions when students and families face housing insecurities, and what happens when temporary housing lands students far away from their neighborhood school. Still to come, learn about the amazing North Clackamas High School students managing high school without any adult help, and what you can do right now to lend a helping hand. That's all coming up on the Proud to Be NCSD podcast, right after this.
Are you looking for a job right now? Looking to work in a fun and supportive environment with great pay and a rewarding career? The North Clackamas School District is hiring. We're currently filling full and part-time positions. You can work and make a difference in young lives and education as a classroom assistant or substitute teacher. Apply to work in one of our school cafeterias, where our lunch staff serves up big smiles with great food every day. We're also looking to hire before and after school caretakers, custodians, and bus drivers. In North Clackamas, we promise it won't take you long to learn why our employees say they're proud to be in NCSD. Apply today on the North Clackamas School District website or call 503-353-6000. That's 503-353-6000.
Based on your experience, do you believe there are more students and families in our district facing housing insecurity that we even know about?
Definitely, yes. So the last couple of years have really opened my eyes to that situation. We had a number of students that we would identify every year, and it was more or less the same, like between 350 and 400 students is where we usually end up.
350 to 400 students each year.
Pretty much towards the end of the school year, that's where we would end up. So just to kind of explain how that works, the population of students who are experiencing homelessness fluctuates a lot more so than I think most of our other student populations. So we don't have a number every year that stays the same, I guess. So every school year we start at zero,
right,
and then we build on that. So some people might ask me in September, well, how many students do we have qualified? And I'll say like 100, and they think it's kind of low, but it's really like a lot for just 1 month of school.
Right.
Over the past couple of years with impacts of COVID on our school community, it's been harder to identify students, and especially during the years that we were online, the numbers that year went way down because it was just really hard to identify students, and we didn't have a lot of tools to make contact with families besides calling and texting and sometimes home visiting. But if people aren't answering the phone or communicating, it was just hard to identify students. So this year, now that all of the rental protections are over, so there's no eviction moratorium, there's no grace period to pay back rent anymore, we're seeing a huge increase in families losing housing. So as of now, we have about, I'd say 200 to 215, I think, students that we've qualified, meaning like we've talked to the parents, we've talked to the students, we've verified their living situation and provided resources to them. So we are about 50 students ahead of where we usually are at this time of the year. And in conversations that I'm having with parents this year, people have told me, oh, we've been homeless since last year. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't know, or no one knew, or no one told us. So
right.
I'm finding out that people have been struggling with housing kind of quietly, or I guess behind the scenes, for a long time, and then maybe have just found out about our program, or have just identified a reason why it would be helpful to get in touch with someone. Or maybe people feel like, and there's all sorts of reasons why people wouldn't get in touch, but I think sometimes families might think it's going to be a really short-term thing, and we just need to stay with my brother for a month until we get back on our feet, and are finding that it's taking a lot longer. Or as the rent prices increase and housing becomes less affordable in this area, it's more difficult than it might be imagined to be at first.
And I think a lot of our families, some who are listening right now, don't think of these kind of things, but you can attest, we have students coming to school every day who spent the previous night at a relative's house or in a tent.
Yeah, I would say luckily camping is pretty rare with our student population, particularly this time of the school year. I won't say it's not happening, and it could be happening without me knowing it.
Sure.
Certainly, I don't know everything, but the families that I meet with and talk to, for the most part, are doubled up. So when we say doubled up, that just means they're sharing housing with another family due to an economic hardship.
Right.
So we're not talking about families who are maybe renovating and have to live with their cousins while they fix up their house, or I guess shop for housing is another thing that comes up. Like, oh, we're just saving up to buy a house, and the housing that they're temporarily staying in is perfectly adequate and reasonable. So not everyone who's sharing housing would be under the umbrella
Correct.
Of McKinney-Vento.
Right.
But for the most part, yeah, if we're looking at a family who's dealt with a rent increase suddenly, or a lot of apartments in our area are being renovated and families have to move out while they're changing ownership, or, you know, there's a building right across the street from Wichita that has been completely redone, and it now has, it just has a fancy name now, and it's all redone, and I don't know how much they're going to charge, but I know it's a lot more than what they charged before. And personally, last year I spoke to at least two families who were living there who had to relocate, and both of them ended up living outside of our school district area because there wasn't any affordable housing for them to access here.
It makes me really think about, as a former principal, I mean, we have elementary school kids coming into our school every day, and maybe me as the principal or the teacher, we're worried about whether they did their spelling homework or did this little project that we've asked them to do, where they're more worried about where they're going to stay that night and if they're going to have a warm bed to sleep in.
Yeah, so I think looking at their living situations, we do have a big range. Like, a doubled up situation can mean a lot of different things. So it could mean a whole family is sharing one bedroom in someone's house. We have a lot of families that are doing that right now. Or it could mean a student is sleeping on the couch at a different family's house, kind of on their own. So you can just imagine what that would mean for, like, keeping track of your homework and your books and trying to have some privacy even to get things done in a busy household. So I think we all need to think about the context of what that could mean for a student. I mean, I've certainly talked to kids who, middle schoolers, who are very interested in education and are trying to do really well, and they're, like, stressed out to the max about trying to keep up when these situations are out of their hands. I remember a student that came to me a couple years ago with her family. They lost their apartment and they were living with her grandparents, and they were locked out of their place because of an eviction, and all of her school stuff was in the apartment. And it was like not something that she was comfortable sharing with the school,
right.
You know? So I just hope people can have a little bit of understanding of what that might mean for some of our students.
Absolutely. And you certainly don't have to mention any names, but I'm sure there's some success stories about students and families in our district who at one time came through your office, and I'm sure you keep in close contact with them. Do you have any success stories you can talk about, or students that you maybe, or families that you saw when the kids were in second grade and here they are getting ready to graduate high school now?
I think a lot about our unaccompanied students who are under McKinney-Vento. So those are the students that I usually work with the closest, whereas other students that are living with their parents, we usually communicate mostly with the parents. But if we have high school students who aren't with their parents, then they're the ones who we're working really closely with to make sure they have access to resources and they're getting everything they need for their education. And I think, yeah, some of these kids, knowing what they've gone through and the instability that they've faced, and being a 16, 17-year-old without an adult in your life that's helping you, guide you through that education, I'm amazed at what a lot of these kids have accomplished. And it's incredible. I mean, we've got kids who are getting full-ride scholarships to four-year universities who have nobody in their life who has shown them how to do that. In many ways, they've received a lot of support from school, thankfully, but the things that they've done on their own, like managing, I can't imagine being a 16-year-old and trying to remember to go to the dentist or sign paperwork that you need to sign for school or make sure you've even completed your FAFSA and you're filling it out correctly, because that's hard to do when your parents aren't involved. I did have a student a couple years ago. He had come to our district from Mexico. He didn't have any immediate family in this area, but he was couch surfing. So he was living with an uncle and couch surfing with them. So basically in the living room on the couch, and he was holding down a job, finishing school. Before he graduated, we're talking about financial aid, and he was chosen for a really elite scholarship and was basically like, I don't really need, you know, help with my financial aid application, because he was getting 4 years covered and things that you wouldn't even know until you asked, and you're like kind of blown away by their accomplishments. And then I think also we've had a number of families who have gone through McKinney-Vento. You know, they were housed in our district. They lost housing. Maybe they're sharing housing with a family member outside of our school district. And it's kind of gone on for a couple years. And there's always a question of like, should they still be our student? Are we doing the right thing by providing them with these services and transportation if it's gone on for a couple years? Are they missing out on connecting to their residential school, neighborhood school, and friends they might have there? And then a couple of those families, after maybe 4 or 5 years of having their students commute long distances to our school district, they've been able to find permanent housing in our district, and sometimes even in the attendance area that their school, that our student attended. So when I look back on that, I'm thinking like, okay, we stopped this kid from having to change schools possibly at least once, maybe two times, and provided the stability that was able to keep them in their school for this entire period of instability. So I'm always really happy when that's the best case scenario.
I think people who are listening think of our school district as a group of teachers and administrators. I think a lot of times we don't think about the people like you, Katie, behind the scenes, who are doing everything they possibly can in partnerships with schools and other agencies to make sure those kids feel comfortable at school and are able to get to school each day and navigate school. There are kids going through our high schools right now doing it all on their own without any adult help, no parents to help them, no relatives to help them. And they're making it through due to the efforts of you and your department.
Yeah. I mean, I think our unaccompanied students, they always come to my mind, like I said, because I work really closely with them, but I think they're kind of invisible in a way. I mean, certainly some of the counselors would know what's going on, but there's plenty of kids who, for whatever reason, a protective factor that they have, they're not going to come out and tell a bunch of people that they're dealing with this stuff on their own. It might only come up when they're maybe the class is going on a field trip and they're wondering who's going to sign their permission slip, or they have to make a schedule change, or they're even trying to enroll in school. And there's no, the things that we might take for granted, you know, that a lot of kids, of course you have a parent who's watching out for you, and it's just not always the case.
Well, Katie, as we start to wrap up here, you've been serving as our district's homeless student and family liaison for 7 years now, but breaking news on this podcast, and it's not actually great news, I don't think, but this is actually your final week on the job. What's next for Katie Ray?
Yes, it is. So Wednesday of this week is my last day. So it's bittersweet for me because I've become very familiar with this community. Obviously, I have close connections with a lot of students and families here, and it's going to be hard to say goodbye to them. We do have a team that we're building at Wichita, so I feel like they will be in good hands when I'm gone. But I will be moving on to the Gresham Barlow School District, working as a school social worker in one of their high school programs.
When you look back on what you and North Clackamas has accomplished and continues to advocate for students and families facing housing insecurity, what are you most proud of?
I think any of those times that I that I mentioned where we reduced a barrier for somebody, and it might have been something that to us seems really simple. Like, so even our McKinney-Vento students automatically qualify for free lunch, so we don't need to track down an application or talk to parents about whether or not they income qualify. If you're under this program and you're experiencing housing loss, you qualify for free lunch. So that is one like less bureaucratic thing that someone has to deal with on top of an extremely stressful time in their life. So anytime that we've been able to collaborate across departments, reduce a barrier for somebody, again, that might appear to be somewhat insignificant, but it really isn't when it's helping that student to access their education a little bit easier.
And I know we mentioned this once before, but if listeners want to help, because I do feel that your story is going to touch a lot of listeners that I don't think people realize what goes on behind the scenes. But if people listening right now, they're driving in their car, they're listening at home maybe, and they think, you know what, I want to help with that. I want to help those students who have those barriers in front of them. What's the best way for them to do that?
Well, I have a two-part answer to that.
Okay.
Obviously, donating to the Wichita Center is super helpful. Providing things that might be helpful for a family who's in transition. But we do have a lot of families who are living in hotel rooms right now. So it might not be super helpful for them to come to Wichita and get like a giant box of food that has like raw onions and canned food and things that you can't necessarily use in a hotel situation. So thinking of things that might be helpful for a family who's in that kind of transition, we don't have access to a kitchen, so convenient food items and travel size hygiene things and stuff like that. So there's always an opportunity to, you know, do a drive or donate actual tangible items. The other part of my answer is to just support the work that people who are working in housing are trying to accomplish. So we have different solutions to this issue of homelessness, and I think maybe people might think of adult homelessness and student or children being homeless as separate things, but they are connected in that the number one indicator of adult homelessness is whether or not you were homeless or in foster care as a young person. Mm-hmm. So I think if we want to look at this whole issue as being connected, we need to support kids who are in these situations and maybe open up our communities a little bit to some of these solutions that are being proposed by our county leaders and other people working in housing. So specifically, like if there's a new shelter program that's going to be moving into your neighborhood, maybe think about who would benefit from that before we worry a lot about the effect that it might have on the community.
Well, Katie Ray, I know you're moving on from this position, but the goal of this podcast is to highlight and celebrate NCSD staff members and students who truly make a difference in our community. And I'm not sure we could find anyone who has made a bigger impact on our community members than you have. Thank you for all you've done to make sure our families and especially our students remain connected to their school communities. You truly make us proud to be NCSD. And that'll do it for our final podcast of 2022 as our students head off to winter break. If you are a North Clackamas resident listening right now, and even if you are listening in other parts of the country, please celebrate responsibly during the upcoming weeks. And remember, there are families not far from where you are right now who could use a little boost as we round out the calendar year. Please check our district's website for the Wichita Center for Family and Community and consider volunteering or making a donation. Thank you again for listening. We'll be back again during the first week of 2023. We'll talk to you then. Thanks for listening to the Proud to Be NCSD podcast. In North Clackamas, we know that education is a community effort, and we're so thankful that you and your family are a part of our community. Until next time, remember, there are always great things to see wherever you go in NCSD.